Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
On today's episode of Mentally Stronger.
Yeah, so also in the introduction, I tell the story of a woman named Clara Madeline Jansen who has a mental breakdown in 1905 in a little farmhouse outside of a place called Keeler, Wisconsin. And she unfortunately decided to take the lives of her four young children and then take her own life. And her husband came home and found the whole family wiped out. And I mentioned this in response to your question because this is my great-grandfather's first wife, and he later remarried to my great-grandmother. And I found this out when I was in my mid-20s that but for the murder of these children, I literally would not exist. We would not be having this conversation. You'd not be hearing my voice. So in a cosmic sense, yes, I mean, I'm a fluke, as we all are. The sort of aspects of the sort of intersecting paths and tragedies and so on that create the moment that we're conceived or the lineage that we're conceived from are a series of flukes. I also think that, you know, when people ask me what fluke was most important for my life, the honest answer is I probably don't know. And that's one of the arguments that I'm making in the book as well, is that there's an infinite number of things that are affecting the trajectories of our lives that we will never see because we cannot imagine these alternatives.
Welcome to Mentally Stronger, the show that will help you develop the mental strength you need to reach your greatest potential, no matter what life throws your way. I'm Amy Morin, psychotherapist, mental strength trainer, and an international best-selling author of 6 books on mental strength. Every Monday, I introduce you to a guest whose story and expertise can inspire you to think, feel, and do your best in life. And the fun part is, we record it all from a sailboat in the Florida Keys. Now, let's dive into today's episode. What if a flat tire could change the entire course of your life? Like maybe being late helps you meet the person that you were meant to spend the rest of your life with. Or maybe it helped you avoid an accident where you would have been injured or even killed. Think about how many unexpected little things in life may have led to a chance encounter, a new opportunity, or at the very least, a funny story. And those are the things that you know about. Of course, there are a lot of things in life that we'll never know. Like, where would your life be right now had you not gone to that one party? Or had you not responded to that one email that eventually led to your new job? It's not just our lives that are changed by one small thing. Sometimes the entire course of history is changed because one person was 10 minutes late. Here to talk about all of those things today is Brian Klass. Brian is a professor of global politics at the University College London. He's a contributing writer for The Atlantic and the author of a best-selling book called Fluke. The subtitle is Chance, Chaos, and Why Everything We Do Matters. Some of the things he talks about today are why random events matter more than the things we plan out, why it's important to embrace uncertainty, and how you can enjoy the randomness of life. So here's Brian Klass on how random events shape our lives. Brian Klass, welcome to Mentally Stronger.
Thank you for having me.
So you wrote this book, Fluke. And maybe before we dive into what that means, maybe you could just give us some examples of a few of your favorite historical flukes so that people understand what we're talking about when we say the word fluke.
Yeah, so there are sort of chance events, contingent events that could have turned out otherwise had there been even a slight tweak in the moment. And one of the biggest ones for me is the asteroid that wiped out the dinosaurs, because if that space rock had been 4 seconds late, humans probably wouldn't exist because it wouldn't have made the dinosaurs go extinct and mammals wouldn't have risen and none of us would be here. So that's one of the sort of ones for our species, but they're throughout history. I mean, the opening story in Fluke is about a couple that goes on vacation in 1926 to Kyoto, Japan, and falls in love with the city. And it turns out that 19 years later, the husband is America's Secretary of War, and he's tasked with deciding where to drop the atomic bomb. The target committee chooses Kyoto, and he takes it off the targeting list primarily because he had vacationed there 19 years earlier. So hundreds of thousands of people dying in one city rather than another is traceable back to a 19-year-old vacation that a couple took. So my argument is basically that our lives are chaos unfolding all the time like this, and so is our history, and that we tend to imagine otherwise because it's a much tidier and neater way to think about both our lives and the way that history unfolds.
Yeah, and throughout your book, you have lots of examples of these little things that didn't just change somebody's life, they changed probably all of our lives. And then they were all these really small things, right? Somebody's 2 minutes late and suddenly there's this domino effect that affects everybody. How about in your own life, now that you've talked so much about flukes, can you recognize some flukes in your life that have really changed the course of everything that you do these days?
Yeah, so also in the introduction, I tell the story of a woman named Clara Maudlin Jansen who has a mental breakdown in 1905 in a little farmhouse outside of a place called Keeler, Wisconsin. And she unfortunately decided to take the lives of her four young children and then take her own life. And her husband came home and found the whole family wiped out. And I mentioned this in response to your question because this is my great-grandfather's first wife. And he later remarried to my great-grandmother. And I found this out when I was in my mid-20s that but for the murder of these children, I literally would not exist. We would not be having this conversation. You'd not be hearing my voice. So in a cosmic sense, yes, I mean, I'm a fluke, as we all are. The sort of aspects of the sort of intersecting paths and tragedies and so on that create the moment that we're conceived or the lineage that we're conceived from are a series of flukes. I also think that, you know, when people ask me what fluke was most important for my life, the honest answer is I probably don't know. And that's one of the arguments that I'm making in the book as well, is that there's an infinite number of things that are affecting the trajectories of our lives that we will never see because we cannot imagine these alternative pathways. And this is what that film Sliding Doors, I think, captures so well. It's a 1990s film with Gwyneth Paltrow where it traces two versions of her life, one in which she makes the subway in time and one in which she misses it, you know, a split second change. And of course, each version of her has no idea how much her life would have changed but for that little sliding door. And I think that's happening to us constantly. So I'm sure there are huge moments in my life that I'm just completely oblivious to how they could have turned out.
Ooh, so do you believe in that everything happens for a reason? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I have a chapter called Everything Doesn't Happen for a Reason.
Right.
And I think there are some things that just happen. Now, I think there's a useful coping mechanism embedded in that saying. So I'm not trying to rob anyone of that sort of idea of trying to make sense of the chaos of our life with thinking there's this grand purpose to everything. I don't believe there is, but if it's a useful way for people to navigate the world, then that's fine with me. What I think is more liberating, though, is I think it actually is sometimes liberating to know that everything doesn't happen for a reason, because it takes away some of the pressure from our lives. I mean, I met this guy, there's a person that I wrote about in Fluke, and I hadn't met him when I wrote this story, about a man who went to meet his work colleague before a conference, and she gave him a tie. And the tie had a Monet painting on it, and he went to go change his shirt to show her how much this meant to him. So he goes up to his hotel room to iron this other shirt, and as he's ironing it, he looks up, and his colleague has gone up to the conference, which was on the 101st floor of the World Trade Center, and she died in the first plane hitting the World Trade Center. So this tie saves his life. Now, what he told me later on when I met him was he said, the worst thing people could say to me, it's what everyone said, he said, but it was the worst thing, was that everything happens for a reason. Because that meant that he was supposed to live and his colleague was supposed to die. And actually, he found that much more upsetting because the amount of pressure you put on yourself when there's a grand purpose to all these misfortunes in our lives is so suffocating, whereas sometimes just accidents or chance or chaos overwhelms us and we can't control a lot of it. And if you accept that, I think if you give up control, and I have this sort of mantra throughout Fluke where I say, we control nothing, but we influence everything. I actually think that's a liberating way to live. I think it's a way that sort of frees us from this sense that there's always a grand purpose and a grander truth that we have to discover. There's a lot of stuff that's happened in my life that I didn't control, and I just have to accept. And I think that that's easier for me to do when I don't think there's always a reason behind everything.
Yeah, there's research behind that saying everything happens for a reason. The person who says it will feel better immediately, and the person who hears it doesn't. And I know that in my own life. When my husband passed away, people would say, oh, well, everything happens for a reason. And it didn't feel good. I felt like punching them in the face when they said it. Because in that moment, I didn't want to hear that. Like, what would possibly be the reason? But on the other hand, I have a friend who, whenever anything bad happens, she decides it happened for a reason. If she gets a flat tire on the way to work, she's like, well, this is God's way of saving my life, because probably in 10 minutes I would have been in an accident had I been there. So she finds her own meaning in those little things. Like, her alarm doesn't go off, it's because she was going to get in an accident, so it's great that she overslept. And she finds that to be helpful, and maybe that's the key. If we look at our own lives and we're able to say this, that I have some meaning in this, but at the same time, to not go around and tell everybody else why something happened for a purpose.
Well, I think, you know, one of the beauties of 8 billion humans making sense of this really weird place that we call reality is that, you know, we all have our own ways of dealing with it. And so for some people, it might be useful. I don't think it's scientifically true. I mean, personally, I don't believe that there's always some grand plan to things. I'm trying to apply chaos theory to humans, and that's part of what Fluke is. And chaos theory doesn't always have reasons. It's just this sort of really complex interconnection of events. What I would say, though, is that I think that one of the pitfalls of everything happens for a reason as a mentality is that people who suffer deserve it in some way, right? Mm-hmm. I find it liberating to think that sometimes just things happen. And I think about, you know, what this means for how we process success and failure, for example, right? So, like, I think about my own life, and all the things that I have achieved are derived from a series of aspects around my life that I had no control over, but were arguably the four most important things that I can imagine. One was when I was born. Two is where I was born. Three is who my parents were. And four is how my brain was structured, that it was healthy and so on. And all of those things are by far more important than hard work. Like, if I had been, one of the places I do field work is in rural Madagascar, where the average person lives on like $1.50 a day. If I'd been born there, there's no way we'd be having this conversation. Just no way. I don't care who I was, how hardworking I was. It's just impossible. Like, most people don't have electricity. So, you know, when I think about that and I think about the aspects of success that are completely out of my control, I feel like it's probably a healthier way to live to take a little bit less credit for our successes. But also, the flip side is a lot less blame for our failures. And, you know, it's not like we shouldn't strive. Like, humans are striving creatures. We're supposed to try to make the best of our own situations and so on, work hard, et cetera. But I think that everything happens for a reason mentality is tied to a sense of guilt for people when bad things happen to them, that somehow they were supposed to endure this. And, you know, for me personally, and I'd say there's other people who will process the world differently. For me personally, it's actually much more liberating to imagine that the actions that I take are important, that I influence other people's lives, I influence everything, which is what chaos theory shows, but that I don't have control over just about anything. And therefore, part of the lesson there is that there's not a grand plan. So maybe if I'm a cosmic accident, I should just try to live life with people I love around me and try to make the world a little bit better for other people. And that, to me, that's a much more uplifting and liberating mentality than trying to search for hidden meaning in every little random aspect of our lives.
Let's take a minute right here to get some offers from our sponsors. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever done something you regret and you don't dare tell anyone? Do you have a secret and you're worried that it might come to light? Holding on to secrets leads to shame, and it can make you feel worse. Therapy is a safe place to get things off your chest and to work through those things that are weighing you down. As a therapist, I see firsthand how much relief people get when they talk about the things they've secretly been struggling with. Talking to a therapist is different than talking to your friends or your family. It's helpful for learning positive coping strategies and for developing a better understanding of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, it's convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/mentallystrong today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/mentallystrong. Do you want to get high-quality meat delivered straight to your house? Or in my case, a sailboat? Try ButcherBox. It saves me time and money. And if you order right now, Mentally Stronger listeners can get steak, chicken, or salmon free in every single order for an entire year. I love that ButcherBox offers grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, and wild-caught seafood. There are no antibiotics or added hormones. They even offer vegetarian options. ButcherBox lets you decide how often you want deliveries, and you can pick a curated plan, or you could completely customize your box. Sign up at butcherbox.com/stronger and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer, plus an additional $20 off. Choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/stronger and use code STRONGER to choose your free for a year offer. Plus, get $20 off your first order.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Okay, we're back. So then why bother? If you think, okay, a lot of the things that are going to happen to me in my life are just going to be a fluke, depending on whatever randomly happens that day, why bother to try to be successful?
Yeah, so I love this question because a lot of people come to my ideas and their initial reaction is one of nihilism. They say like, well, if there's no purpose, right? Now, I will say quite bluntly, I don't believe that my life has a cosmic purpose. I think that there could have been a space rock that had hit the earth at a different time and I wouldn't exist. Or if this mass murder of children in Wisconsin had happened, I wouldn't exist. But that doesn't mean that my life's meaningless. I just don't believe there's a grander sort of plan for it. What I think is very uplifting about my worldview and this sort of idea of chaos theory showing that every little detail of our lives influences everyone else's, in some ways small, in some ways big, is that there's no throwaway action. Everything is important. Our conversation is important. People are going to think about the world differently after they listen to this episode. Maybe a few, maybe a lot, you know, maybe a small change, maybe a big change for someone. I don't know. But there's no like aspect of our lives that is meaningless. And that I think is really uplifting. I think that I also think about how arbitrary it is that I exist. There are just, Richard Dawkins has this line, he's an evolutionary biologist who has this line where he talks about the infinite ranks of unborn ghosts, the people who could have existed but don't. And of course, in the moment of conception, there are literally millions of these people who could have existed but don't. And so, you know, I feel incredibly lucky to exist. And in that time that I have on the planet, okay, maybe there's not a grand purpose to my life. I'm still going to affect the trajectory of a lot of other people's lives, the way that they experience the world. And also, I'm going to affect the trajectory of my lineage, all sorts of things. All of that's important. It doesn't have to have some grand purpose for it to matter, because it matters insofar as it affects other people's lives. And to me, that's enough. I mean, for other people, they want to have a sense that they're part of this grand plan. I'm okay with being a cosmic accident, enjoying life and trying to make other people's lives a bit better, and just being in awe of how amazing it is to be alive, which I think is something that is worth something in itself.
Yeah, I guess, and speaking of the amazing fact that we're all alive, most of us, our parents met under interesting circumstances, or had somebody not been 5 minutes late, that wouldn't have happened. My mother met my father because she was a teenager throwing snowballs at a car. She hit his car and he happened to stop. Had she not thrown that snowball in that second, perhaps I wouldn't be here today. So a lot of us, I mean, it's really easy to look back over our lives and think a million, billion things had to happen in order for me to be here today.
Yeah, you know, this is the other thing that I try to point out to people, is that the philosophical implication of what I'm saying, I find really, really uplifting in a moment when a lot of people feel interchangeable and unimportant, right? I think there's this sort of mental health around despair tied to things like my life is unimportant, I could be replaced by a robot, right? I mean, these sorts of ideas. And one of the things I say to people is, I'm like, do you know who Albert Einstein's great, 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 great grandmother was, right? And the answer is no, right? But that person mattered a hell of a lot.
Yeah.
Because if they didn't exist, you know, and like, that's the kind of stuff where I think when you start thinking that way, it's like we're in this unbroken chain of cause and effect where we have no idea what the ripple effects of our actions are going to be, but they're not meaningless. I mean, and if it's somebody else, it's going to change the world, right? I think this is something that is really, to me, valuable, is I don't know in the short term exactly how much I'm affecting the world or how much I'm changing people's experiences or whatever. But if it was somebody else, the world would be different. And I don't know how it'd be different, but it would be different. And I think that's, to me, that's enough. It's that you're part of this grand experiment of life and existence and so on. And, you know, I think the way that so many of us are taught to think about these problems is that your life is not meaningful unless you accumulate stuff and status. And it's your fault if you don't do those things because you're exclusively in control of your own destiny. And I think all of those things are not true. I think that stuff and status are not where we derive most of our meaning. And I also think that it's not up to us exclusively whether we get those things. So I find there's sort of a liberating aspect to embracing the chaos of life.
And then how does that play into our decisions that we make? We might spend a year, 5 years trying to plan where to go to college, what to major in. But it might be like which aisle we went down the grocery store that actually affects our lives in a much bigger way. So knowing that, how do you make these decisions in life?
Yeah, so I have this term called the snooze button effect that I coined in the book where, you know, you imagine that you wake up and you slap the snooze button and then your life rewinds by 3 seconds and you don't slap the snooze button. Your life will unfold differently, right? You might have different conversations. You might meet different people. Some of those people might turn out to be people who refer you to a new job or a spouse or whatever it is. So the question then becomes, oh, people say to me, do you get paralyzed every time you look at the snooze button now that you've written this book? And I say, no, because the thing is, you can't know. There's no way to know. So what you do is you make decisions probabilistically, right? I don't walk into traffic, even though I might be saved, because probability is that I'll die. So in those instances, you're still thinking rationally. What I think is important, though, is that when you have a sense that you have less control and you also have a higher sense of uncertainty, you do a few things. One is you experiment more. And the reason you experiment more is because you don't know what's best for you. And there's a great story that I relay in Fluke where it's the story of this jazz musician, Keith Jarrett, who goes to the Cologne Opera House and the piano he has requested, this exact, impeccable, perfect piano, just hasn't been ordered. And so he arrives and the only piano for his massive concert is this like rickety piece of crap that is not supposed to be used by anyone of his stature. But he has to play it because the concert's starting in 2 hours and there's no time to get a replacement. And he adjusts himself to this. And what he ended up producing is the still to this day, the best-selling jazz album of all time. Because it turned out that he didn't know what was going to produce the best music. And by his adaptation to an unexpected event, he actually produced something that was better. And so the lesson I take from that is, okay, we all think we're masters of our own destiny. We're in control. We know exactly what we want to get out of life. The sort of life hack strategy, drive-through strategy of living and so on. And I think that actually we don't. And so experimentation becomes much more important. So that's something. The other aspect of this is my grandfather's advice to me, which I love for how to have a successful life. He's the son, by the way, of the man who came home to find his family murdered. So it makes a bit of sense that this was his advice. But he said the advice for a good life is two words: avoid catastrophe. And, you know, in a way, there's so much about optimization that we're told. Like you have to get the last 3% of efficiency into, you know, out of inefficiency has to be purged from your schedule, even this little tiny bit. Actually, you know, a lot of it, it's resilience. You know, a lot like experimentation and resilience are the two sort of watchwords that I would say for a philosophy that is derived from embracing chaos theory, because you don't know what you want. You might not have as much control as you think you do. And therefore, you should also plan to have a bit more resilience in your life and not focus on slaying the last bits of inefficiency or slack or whatever, because often those are where the sort of beauty of life can be most discovered.
And there's a concept in your book you talk about called radical uncertainty. Of course, most of us are really uncomfortable with uncertainty. I'm the kind of person that likes to read the last page of a mystery novel before the first page because I want to know how it ends. just because I don't like it to be uncertain while I'm reading the book. Obviously, in real life, I can't do that. But how do we practice radical uncertainty?
Oh, you are the opposite. I love mystery novels, but I never spoil them for myself. But I will say, so radical uncertainty is basically a situation in which you cannot know any, there's no information that will help you make a decision because there's absolutely no way to forecast it. The example that I use that I borrow from the economist Mervyn King in the book is when Osama bin Laden is in his compound in Pakistan and Barack Obama is trying to decide whether to launch the raid to kill him. They don't know whether he's there or not, and they don't know whether the raid will succeed. And there is no information in the world that is going to help them at that time because they fundamentally don't know if he's actually there. And Obama still had to make a decision. So we encounter radical uncertainty a lot in our lives, where it's literally just impossible to know what's going to happen. And you can try to game it out, but there's certain unknowns that are untamable. There's a few things I would say about that. One is that uncertainty has upside. If you were told when you were 5 years old, there's a 34% probability that this is the person you're going to marry and a 12% probability that you're going to marry this person. I mean, it would rob us of one of the great things about being human. Uncertainty is also part of being human. It's scary when it's tied to bad things, when it's tied to diagnoses or deaths and so on. But there's also this aspect of uncertainty that is exhilarating, I think, for humans. But when it comes to radical uncertainty, I think it's actually really, really useful for humans to say, I don't know. It's like, it's something that we're taught. You know, I do punditry sometimes. I go on TV and like, you can't say, I don't know. You like would never be invited back because you have to give a specific answer for everything. And sometimes I don't know, right? I don't know the answer to the question. And I think for humans, it's like those three words are really liberating. They're the kinds of stuff where they put us into the right kind of framework for decision-making in those moments too, because you make smarter decisions in moments where you don't know, because you have some resilience factored into the calculation. If you're overconfident or over certain, you make mistakes, you take too many risks and so on. So I think there's an aspect to radical uncertainty that's actually really healthy for us because it exposes the limits of our decision-making and forces us to think about what is unknown and then navigate it accordingly.
And maybe there's some comfort in that and just knowing that we do make better decisions when there's some uncertainty. We know this with professional athletes or the best athletes in the world. Those who walk up there saying, this is going to be easy, I've got this, actually perform worse than the person who's like, ah, you know, I think I should work really hard because this isn't a guaranteed win. And maybe if we looked at life like that, this is not a guaranteed win. So, and I don't know what the outcome's going to be, so I have to try even harder.
Yeah, but you know, also adding to that, I would say that one thing that I've been pleasantly surprised about when I've talked to people about the book is I say to them, what about in your own life? The things that you think about as joyous or wonderful, either really happy memories or moments where you've ended up having a positive thing happen to you, how many of those were serendipitous? There's a line I quote in the book where it talks about how it's from a sociologist philosopher named Hartmut Rosa, where he says, like, even in the planned moments of life, like a birthday celebration, the stuff you remember the most is not the planned stuff. It's the unexpected. And I think that this is the kind of stuff where when I think about the trajectory of my own life, there's so many things I did not plan. And most of them have turned out really, really positive for me. And if I had had a sort of checklist for my life when I was 18, I think I'd be miserable if I'd actually achieved all those things because they were, you know, I've shifted what I want out of life. I've seen that there's some things that I would not have tried that I was forced into that caused me to take a diversion or a new trajectory. And that sort of forced experimentation, I think, teaches us a lesson. It's like, be open to it. To me, since writing this book, I have tried to become more open to the chaos of life, a little bit less of the Google Maps mentality that I can save 3 minutes by taking the most efficient route and a little bit more of the exploration, wandering around with my dog, you know, sort of route of life. And I think, I know it sounds a bit flippant and cliche, but I think that's the kind of stuff that is what life is about. I think that we're told constantly that life is about earning more money, accolades, certificates, all this sort of, I think, I get a lot of meaning out of walking my dog and talking to people I care about. And I think it's okay for us to say that's enough. I don't think we have to say that there's always, it's not that the other stuff doesn't matter, right? Obviously, I'm trying to be successful, like I'm writing books and stuff. But it's just more that I'm not trying to mistake the idea that if I write a book that lots of people read, that replaces the sort of well-being in every other area of my life, because it doesn't. It's not a stand-in for the stuff that really makes us human.
And where does the role of effort come into this? Because I could see some people saying, well, why bother to put in much effort because everything's a fluke in the end anyway.
Well, I think that's the other thing that is intrinsic to humans, is that we like having passion about things. And so, you know, effort is a proxy for that. I mean, obviously, a lot of effort for a job that you care not at all about is difficult, because it can produce a situation in which you have basically gone through the motions of passion without actually feeling it. And that's a problem. So I think I'm hopeful that people can find effort in something that's aligned with stuff that they actually care about. That's a really important aspect of this. But I think, you know, we're striving creatures. That's literally what we do. We strive to make our world better. We strive to make our lives better, to help other people, all these sorts of things. And they give us meaning. And I think giving up is not good for anyone. It's just a question of what you put the effort into. And some people who don't care about their jobs put their effort into their families or into sports or into recreational activities. That's fine too. I think whatever it is that you decide, it's just, I think that people are best served when they figure out what really excites them and then try to do that really, really well. And I think the despair comes from the misalignment. It's when they exert most of their effort on something they don't care about.
Let's take a minute right here to get some offers from our sponsors.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Okay, we're back. And then how much do you think we have control over in life?
Well, I think it's a mix. I mean, I think that, you know, like, it's obviously the case that if you work hard, that there is a loose correlation between that and success in societies that are more meritocratic, have more opportunities, et cetera. But I think that there's so many things that are outside of our control that we don't talk about. And I think some of that stuff is tied to upbringing. Some of it's tied to the sort of arbitrariness of where we were born, as I said before. But it's also stuff where, like, when I think about breaks that I've gotten, right, we have these sort of moments where you get a break in life. You know, there's an opportunity knocks. Those are moments where I didn't engineer it. There's nothing, we call this luck often, and there's nothing that was in my control in having this. So seizing luck is a different story, right? Like seizing opportunity when it comes and so on. Okay, yes. And this, I think, is a useful way of navigating the world. But I think that there's something really liberating about accepting a lack of control. And it's not to say that I'm powerless. It's to say that there's some things that are outside of my control and I'm okay with that. And then, as I said before, like I've just realized that I don't have to engage in like what I describe as sort of the performative aspects of hustle culture, I think, are really damaging to us, right? Where it's like, oh, you just have to be seen as being constantly on the go, constantly getting, you know, a higher job, you know, higher pay or a better job or whatever. Like, I think there's some of that stuff that can be useful for some people at pivotal moments in their career. But I think that if you're constantly doing that, the question is what for? And when you accept a lack of control, you also are freed from that mentality. I've just, since writing this book, I've enjoyed moments in life more, by which I mean like snapshots, right? Where I'm just sort of sitting around. My favorite author is this guy, Kurt Vonnegut, really well known for Slaughterhouse-Five and so on. But he has this great quote where he talks about his uncle and how he used to just look around when they were on the porch sipping lemonade and sometimes remark, if this isn't nice, I don't know what is. And I just do that more. I just stop and I say, you know, these are the moments that, like, this is why it's amazing to be alive. And I think a lot of what we're told in daily life is to sort of get rid of those moments because they're inefficient. And I think it's the exact wrong advice for navigating the world.
I think so too. And the more we try to control, the more our anxiety goes up. We know that. And then because we can't control it, and then we see that it's out of our control. But how do you let go? Do you have any tips for people? Like, how do you let go of that desire to control everything?
I mean, the most practical advice I have on this is go for a walk a lot more. I mean, honestly, like, it's just like, it's the kind of stuff where I walk my dog a lot, and, you know, I'm a dog obsessed person, but it's something where, like, I would stare at my computer for ages when I was writing Fluke. This is something that, you know, not everyone's going to write a book, but I was sitting there trying to write this book, and I would sit at my screen and it would just be producing awful writing. And I would just close the laptop and I would go for like an hour and a half walk. And I would come back and I would then, it would just flow out of me. And it's the kind of stuff where, like, relinquishing control and trying to force things a little bit less is really liberating, but it's also good for our creativity. Like, I wrote about this in Fluke where there's science behind this called leisure time invention, but it's got older roots where Galileo, for example, came up with the pendulum clock when he was seeing a chandelier in a cathedral in this moment of quiet contemplation. And the Wright brothers came up with the airplane when they were observing buzzards while they were having a picnic. And I think we're told, like, we have to put in long hours. I think human minds don't work that way always. I think giving up control and trying to force things a little less, going out into nature more, trying to do things that are like just relinquishing that control physically, I think actually liberates our minds a lot too. So, you know, it's not perfect advice. It's not going to solve every problem you have, but the world looks a lot less bad when you're out on a walk. I mean, I think that's just something where I doom scroll like everyone else. You go for a walk, you put your phone away. Things look a lot less bad when you're looking at a tree. You know, I mean, it sounds flippant, but it's just literally true. So that's my advice.
You know, and I think that's really sound advice for so many reasons and something all of us can do. So last question for you would be, do you think it's helpful to look back over our lives and identify some of the flukes? My example in life would be, I wrote an article that 50 million people read. Had I released it 5 minutes later on a different website, 2 seconds sooner, I might not be having this conversation with you today, because from that I got a book deal and now I've written more books and I get to have a podcast. But I often think about that. Had I released the article in a slightly different moment in life, I might not be here. But is that helpful? Is it helpful for us to look back at those things and say, oh, you know, here's this random thing that happened and the strange domino effect that it had?
Yeah, I think it's helpful for two reasons. One is that when you realize the sort of randomness, it gives you a sense that you should be open to the unexpected. So you're totally right about, I've had these moments as well where it's like something has happened and I'm like, okay, there was a tweet that I once sent that caused a very series of very positive things in my life to happen. And I just was walking down the street and maybe I hadn't sent it, you know, whatever. So when I look back at that, I think about, okay, well, that means there's sort of fragility to success, but there's also sort of moments where you just sort of are open to the unexpected. That's really, really healthy to be. But the second thing that I would say about that is that when you think about the flukes of life, it does have philosophical implications. And I think so many of us are sold what I think is a lie. I think it's that you have to be in control of your life. You have to dictate exactly how you want it to unfold according to a script that you're told you're supposed to follow that may or may not fit how you are. And when you think about how much of your life is diverted by chance or randomness, you just can jettison that. And one of the things, I had an early conversation with my editor when I was writing this book, and I was like, look, I think I'm going to say that, like, the way that, like, lots of people think about the world is just fundamentally wrong. And he's like, do it. Just say what you think. And I'm like, that's when I just went all in. And I was like, I think that, like, a lot of people are thinking, and I was one of these people 3-4 years ago, I've changed my worldview a lot. I think that a lot of the stuff we're told about how to live is wrong. And I think a lot of it is embedded in these myths that imagine that we're complete individuals who have no relations with other people. We're masters of our destiny and we get to decide what happens to us. And, you know, I think this idea is really toxic for so many people because most people don't get those huge breaks. Most people don't have 15 million people read an article. So when that doesn't happen to them and you have this mentality that, like, oh, you're supposed to be in control of everything, it's like, well, what's wrong with you? Why don't you have an article that's read by 15 million people? And for me, when I look back at my success, I think there's a lot of arbitrariness to it. I don't think that I mean, it's not that I didn't have worthy ideas. It's that I got lucky as well. And I think acknowledging luck and sort of misfortune and all these forces that we can't control gives us a more resilient, healthier mentality for how to navigate the world.
Oh, wise words. Brian Klass, thank you so much for being on Mentally Stronger. We'll link to Fluke in our show notes. Is there what's the best place to send people who want to learn more about you?
Well, I write a newsletter called The Garden of Forking Paths. So if people want to subscribe to that, it's free. And I write on that at least once a week.
Okay, we will link to that in our show notes as well. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Welcome to The Therapist Take. It's the part of the show where I'll break down some of the strategies Brian shared and talk about how to apply them to your life today. Here are three of my favorite strategies that he shared. Number one, accept that many things in life are out of your control. Your belief about what's within your control and what's out of your control impacts your mental health. I have a whole chapter about it in my book, 13 Things Mentally Strong People Don't Do. If you have what's known as an internal locus of control, it means that you believe you have control over almost everything. Like you're in complete control of how successful you are or how much money you make. On the other end of the spectrum is what's called an external locus of control. People with an external locus of control believe almost everything is out of their hands. They think they have no control over what happens to them, and they're more likely to believe in fate or that the universe has the power to either punish them or reward them, and it really has nothing to do with their choices. In terms of our mental health, the healthiest place to be is in the middle, with what's known as a bi-locus of control, where you acknowledge, yeah, I have some control over my life, but not all. Like I can study for the test, but I can't control how hard the questions are. Or I could prepare for the job interview, but I can't control if I get hired. Or I can take steps to eat healthy and exercise, but it doesn't guarantee I won't ever get a health issue. So consider where you are on this spectrum. Do you tend to have more of an internal locus of control or external? Learning how to develop a good balance might improve your mental health quite a bit. Number two, think about how you matter. I'm glad that Brian talked about how to look at what you do matters. And you might not even know how those little things right now could change history. I loved his example of how you probably have no idea who Einstein's great-grandmother was. But yet, she was a pretty important person. So who knows how those little choices you make today could make a huge difference, if not today, maybe down the road. It's interesting to think that there are a lot of ways you might change the world, but you might never know about it. So while you might think that the city you live in or the job that you take are the biggest decisions you'll ever make in your life, it might actually be a chance meeting with somebody at the grocery store that actually makes all the difference in the world. Keeping that in mind might remind you that what you do today matters, and knowing that you matter is good for your mental health. And number three, embrace radical uncertainty. Embracing uncertainty is tough. And like I said, I love to know the ending of a story before I even read the first page, because then I don't have to tolerate the uncertainty throughout the whole book. When I know the ending, I can relax and enjoy the read. Life doesn't work like that, though, and I know that's a good thing, that we don't know the future. So we might as well embrace the uncertainty along the way. So if you struggle with this, remind yourself to enjoy the journey and remember that uncertain times offer the opportunity to learn how to tolerate discomfort. You can learn new skills and to remind yourself to just view life as an adventure with endless possibilities. So those are three of Brian's tips that I highly recommend. Accept what's out of your control. Focus on how the things you do matter. And embrace radical uncertainty. To hear more interesting stories about how random events have changed history, check out Brian's book, Fluke. Thank you for hanging out with me today and for listening to the Mentally Stronger podcast. If you like the show, leave us a review on Apple or Spotify. That's one of the best ways to help us get our show in front of other people so that we can make the world a stronger place. And if you want more tips on building mental strength, subscribe to Mentally Stronger Premium. Every week, I answer questions from the Mentally Stronger audience on a special bonus episode. And every month, members get cool stuff, like signed copies of my books in the mail, mental strength cheat sheets, or even one-on-one calls with me. Sign up at mentallystronger.supercast.com or just click on the link in the show notes. And if you know someone who could benefit from learning more about mental strength, share this show with them. Simply sharing a link to this episode could help somebody feel better and grow stronger. And as always, a big thank you to my show's producer, who I only met because of a fluke 5 years ago when he happened to be assigned as my audio engineer when I recorded 13 Things Mentally Strong Women Don't Do, Nick Valentine.